crackpot I was while I was cracked and what about it, and I think he thought it was whiskey, but he found out I didn't drink, and then he kind of got it into his head that it must be women. Well, I didn't seem to go over the women very strong, and so he kind of gave that up, but I could see he kept watching me. And so this day he said to me, he said, "Why is it those dogs make so much racket at times and you pay no attention to them? And then sometimes they'll make just a little yip and you're right on your feet." Well, I says, "It's what they say." Well, sir, I could just see that fellow's face light up. He'd found out what was the matter with me. I was not them dogs talk to me. I understood what they said. Well, sir, that was really funny. But we went on, and when we got to within about 25 miles of Washington, D.C., I kept away from the reporters all I could, and we had a rig fixed up that I'd get in, kind of a tent fixed up that I'd get into, and of course I could hear everything goes on. We got them in about 25 miles of Washington, D.C., and there's three reporters come out there, and of course I hid from them, got in my tent, and he was talking to them, and he says, "You know, those this brother of mine understands what them dogs said, and they, I guess, look kind of funny." Well, he said, "Now, I'll tell you what I'll do." He says, "I'll bet you $100 that I can blindfold him and leave him there where he is, and you can bring a drunk up here. He'll tell you what's there. You can bring a woman up. He'll tell you what's there." He said, "There's a dozen, or you can turn one of the dogs loose. He'll tell you what's going on." He says, "I'll bet you $100 that there's at least a half a dozen things that he can tell you that happens just by what them dogs said." Well, they didn't take him up, but by that time he was plumb convinced, I guess, that I wasn't crazy. Well, anyhow, we couldn't travel very well in the daytime. The cars would bunch up on us. They'd stop to see the dogs, and another car would get behind, and first thing you know, we'd have a traffic jam and have to get clear off the trail. And so we got to get up at around 2 o'clock in the morning. It's cooler then, too. And about 30 miles is all my dog's feet would stand. They commenced to get a little sore, and I see I had to slow them up. Now, I tried moccasins in Canada for a long ways, and the women would make the moccasins for me. That is good. Yeah, they're just a little sack, you know. And they would telephone ahead. And when I'd get there, the women would have a whole bundle of moccasins for my dogs. Well, they'd only last about 6 or 8, 10 miles to be the limit for them. Made out of canvas, of course. Well, by the time you pulled off 4 moccasins off of 8 dogs each and moccasined them again, well, you just spend a devil of a lot of time. So I figured it was easy to just drive them slower. So I just slowed up. Well, you know, one place I got into, I forget the name of it, was way out west, and drove off the trail about a mile to a little town off of the highway. And next morning I got up, and it's 2 o'clock, mind you, and drove out to the highway, and I turned right square back down my own tracks. And I found out after I'd some odd rocks along the trail that I recognized. I said, "Gee, I see them rocks yesterday." And so then I turned around and started back. And met my brother, of course, about halfway back, and he was scared to death. He wondered what had come in. But I stayed all night in the same town again. Next morning, believe me, I headed right. Well, we got into Chicago. And, of course, the mayor gave me the key to Chicago, and I was quite a guy. Cops met me way out of Chicago and brought me in, and then they took me on to the fair. Well, that leader of mine, I'll tell you, you just can't believe it. He was scared stiff. Everybody, I knew he was scared stiff. He was scared about a lot of things. Well, I was, too. But I would talk to him, and he'd straighten out. He could believe what I said, but it's awful hard for him, too. But a thing that was the most interesting to me was coming through the West was I'd hear a car coming, mind you, 2 o'clock in the morning, quiet, and you could hear a car coming just a buzzing, you know. Boy, I don't know how fast it was coming, but I think, holy gee, I better get off the road, I guess, because maybe they'll run into me not being able to see my dogs. And I'd got me a flashlight, so I could, fact is, I'd put, I got a battery in my sled and put some lights on my sled, both rear and back, so I could turn them on and have a light, not for me, but for anybody coming. And I also had a flashlight, and I think, gee, they won't see the dogs and hit them. They might see my lights, and I worried a lot about it. Them cars coming just a-buzzing, you know. And so, but when they'd get, when I'd see them lights, why, I could just hear that engine quit running. That brakes would squeak, and that car would slow up, and by the time it got to me, as a rule, it wasn't going 20 miles an hour. And go on by, and there she'd go humming again. And I wondered what the devil it was. And I talked to my brother about it. And so one night he come back to meet me. And he said, Lord, he said, if you want to see something, he said, take this car and drive out and come back. Well, I couldn't drive a car. So, well, I could, but I didn't know much about it. But he said, them looks like 1,000 flashlights looking right square at you. There was an old eye shining in those lights. He said he just never see anything like it, and no wonder they slowed up. Well, anyhow, after I got my key to the Chicago and went out to the Century of Progress, the first man I met there was Harry S. New. That was the Postmaster General under Hoover, and he had been to Alaska, and I'd got acquainted with him. And you know, that devil knew who I was, remembered me. And, well, I felt right at home, I'm telling you. Well, of course, he introduced me to everybody. And the Dawes, of course, he wanted to know, well, now, just where do you want to stop and how? And, well, I said, I want to get close to the Alaska exhibit. And no dogs allowed in the fairground. And no fires to be built. And nobody stay all night. And only the guards. And so, they took me over to the Alaska exhibit. Well, they had quite a lawn there. And so I set up camp. And I was privileged to build a fire and cook my meals and sleep in my tent there and fixed up my dogs. And boy, I was just in a big way. And everybody there, I think, come to see me. Well, New just brought everybody that was over there to introduce them, and all was a surprise. And he brought over Mrs. Roosevelt, quite a stew over that, and introduced me to her, and she invited me to come on to Washington, D.C. and meet the president. But of course, in the North, when you want to see anybody, you just walk in and see them. That's all there was to it. And I'd never give it a thought, but what, that's the way I'd do with the president. When I got there, I'd just walk in and see him. That'd be all there'd be to it. And so when she asked me to come and see the president, why, everybody congratulated me and all of that. Well, I didn't quite know what. But New was awfully fond of my dogs. He and his wife were there all the time during the fair. And both 33 and 34. And he got pretty well acquainted with my leader, especially in 33. Well, I went on to Washington, D.C., and the same old grind. Had to drive in the morning because people would ball up on me on the streets, on the highway. They just, cars would keep stopping. I got balled up down in Indiana, and the cops come along and was an hour straightening things out. So I went to driving again at 2 in the morning. Well, I got into Washington, D.C. Now, I hadn't thought much about it. I knew I was invited to the White House, but I hadn't thought about clothes. I got in about 10 o'clock in the morning, and they had a place there in the park for me to camp, all picked out. And about an hour after I got here, there come a runner from Mr. Roosevelt. Wanted me to come to the White House. Well, then I woke up. I had on a wool shirt, a pair of overalls, and a pair of moccasins. And I just didn't have time enough to do anything else. That was all there was to it. So I just went up as is. And, well, I felt kind of awkward going in there, all of them fellas dressed up to beat the band, you know, and me with overalls on, but I wasn't there only just a few minutes until somebody come to me and, "Miss Roosevelt, we'll see you," and took me out in another room someplace, and there she was with, oh, I don't know, three or four women. She introduced me, all of them, but I don't remember who they was. But she wanted to know if I would come up next day and meet the president and bring my dogs. Well, certainly I would, and I was about five blocks from the White House. Well, I forget what hour I was to be up there, but anyhow, about an hour before I was to beat the White House, here come three motorcycle cops. And they was to escort me to the White House. Well, there was a quarreling and arguing and right close to me. And I heard one of them say, "Well, damned if I'll do it. I'll quit my job first." And so I went over to find out what it's all about. And I said, "What's the matter?" Well, he said, "Nobody will ride in front of your dogs." I said, "Why?" "Well," they said, "they wolves and they'll eat you up." And, well, I said, "They won't hurt you." I talked to them, but that didn't make any difference. They wasn't going to ride in front of them dogs and get wolves and get eat up. That's all they would do it. That time, of course, the papers had played up the wolf idea, and you thought they was a bad bunch. So I said to this fellow that is supposed to ride in front, I said, "I tell you what, do." I said, just get out there about a half a block, and I said, "I'll hook up my dogs, and when I get ready to go, I'll just holler, and you can go on." I said, "Stay a half a block ahead of them." I said, "You can outrun them." And, well, he finally agreed to that, and he went up to about halfway up the block and stopped there on the curb and was kind of lolling on his motorcycle. And I got my dogs all hooked up, and I yelled to him, I said, "All righty," and I jerked the loop on a slip knot on the tree, and the dogs lit out. Boy, they hadn't done anything to them, and the things just looked good to them, and they seemed to feel awful good. And away we went, you know, and we passed that motor cop before he got started. And, of course, I had to go on up to the White House alone, which I did, easy enough. And lucky didn't catch nobody crossing the street. But I got up there, and the motorcycle cops, all three, come trail along behind, looking kind of cheap, and drove up to the White House. Well, everybody was there. And president out there, and I met him and talked to him a while. And then the kids was all out there, and they all wanted to go for a ride on the dog sled. And so a woman would get on, hold a kid on, I'd drive around on the wheel. We hope we have snow, but we didn't. Drive around the White House grounds on wheels. Well, I was probably there an hour, maybe longer. And the president seemed to get a big kick out of it, and everybody did, in fact. So we got ready to go back, and one of these cops said to me, he said, "How fast do them darn things go?" And that's the first time ever I really knew how fast a dog deemed it go. Well, now, mind you, they drove up the White House, drove around the...